This is the Talking Split Podcast.
Coaches, thank you for jumping into the Talking Split Podcast. We've just listened to that intro music three times in a row because I butchered the first two times. I am Rob Calder, the Coach Development Coordinator at Basketball Victoria. To my right, I have Darren Best, who is the High Performance Coach for the Vic Metro Men. Welcome, Bestie.
Got it the first time, Robbie.
Yeah, well, yeah. Editing. It can fix a lot of problems. To my left, I have the High Performance Coach for the Vic Country Women. Welcome, Zoe Carr.
Thank you for having me.
Always a pleasure to have you both in the podcast. Coaches out there, thank you very much to everyone who has shared, liked, and reviewed the podcast. It is fantastic to be able to get this podcast to as many people out there as we possibly can. And welcome to all the new listeners. We have had a couple of people email in over the last couple of weeks that have said, look, we've only just found the podcast and we have binged like eight seasons worth of content. Hopefully there's been a few in there that have been timely for people that they can go and try and find some content in. So what we are looking to have is a mailbag episode in a few weeks' time as well. So if there are coaches out there that you do have any questions, please do send them in via email. You can get my email address on the Basketball Victoria website, similar with Bestie, similar with Zoe, similar with Coops, or you can jump on to Twitter and you can use the hashtag TalkingSplit. So if there are any questions that you have that you would like us to address, we probably won't do like there might be a couple that we go like full episode on, depending on how meaty the topic is, but we've had a couple of emails over the last few weeks that have sort of said, look, you know, that's probably not worth a whole episode, but it is something that we can get a little bit of content on, and we'll knock everything out in a couple of episodes' time. So if there is anything you're thinking about that you would like to send in, please do. That would be fantastic. This is a bit of a players-only podcast again. So we did this, I want to say, around about this time last year, maybe a little bit earlier, coming out of COVID with, you know, we were mainly talking to players, and we did get a really good response out of that. We had a number of parents that would listen to it, a number of coaches that listened to it, but obviously the players jumped in as well. And I know we timed the release of it, Zoe, so that it was just before one of your under-14 selection camps, I think, from memory.
Yes, yeah, it was perfect.
Yeah, it's almost like we planned it that way. It was more about how players deal with trials, some of the things they have to take into consideration. And I mean, one of the bits of feedback that we gave on that was go and be the demo kid. Like, if coaches are asking for, I need people on court, go and sprint out and be that person that's front of mind. And we had one girl that was like in every demo drill possible and got picked.
Yes.
So from that end, it was a really good investment on her end. So
on reflection, I'm hoping she didn't
just sucker punch you on this one. Yeah, absolutely. Hey, credit to her if she did. Like, that's super smart from the athlete on that space. So what we are going to talk about a little bit more is for players. So we are in that time of year where selections have come out. So whether it be your team selections, whether it be SDP selections, there's a whole lot of announcements coming out at the moment. And obviously for those that make it into things that they want to make it into, great, congratulations. We hope it's what you wanted and you've worked hard for it and those types of things. But obviously there are times where you don't make the team you want. You don't get into the program you want to get into. It might be, you know, months, years worth of investment in that space and you've missed out. So what we're going to look at is, think, one, how you deal with that, but two, what can you actually go and do now to improve? So away from your club setting and away from your team setting, what can you actually go and do in that space? So we are looking around that. There'll be obviously a few different opinions on this. We might hit on a couple of topics more than others and those types of things. But I mean, when you haven't made a team or a program, like, what's the first, I suppose, reaction or emotion you would expect from players, Zoe?
Disappointment. I think if you're not disappointed, then you're probably not really in it for the right reasons. It is okay to feel disappointed and to be upset. You know, that's a human emotion, and we're not saying that you can't be human. That would be ridiculous, especially for, you know, 14, 15, or even younger if we're talking VJBL year-old athletes. So, yeah, I think take the time to be disappointed, that's fine. I think the important thing is then where you direct that disappointment. Do you direct it in pointing fingers? Do you direct it in, you know, looking insular? Do you direct it in going about seeking feedback the right way? Because there is a right way and a wrong way. Do you decide that you're going to set out your goals, or, you know, it's all about your, you know, reaction beyond the disappointment. And one can lead you to eventually reaching your goals, and one can lead to potentially having to move clubs again and again and again, or, you know, several disappointments. Because at some point, you know, look, mistakes get made, definitely not disputing that. But sometimes, you know, we've got to look past those errors and work on ourselves and just forget about what's going on around us and focus on what I can do.
Yep. So, Bestie, Zoe spoke about the right way and the wrong way to go about those types of things. What have you seen in that space where it's gone really well and things that haven't worked so well and just that initial reaction?
Yeah, well, I think disappointment is normal. One of the things I always talk to our parents about in a DOC role is managing expectations at home. You know, I think it's important to make sure that kids are prepared for the possibility of failure because it is part of life, and if it's approached the right way, it can actually be really powerful and sometimes more powerful than making the group that you wanted to. So the most important part of it is reflection. You know, did my habits match my goals? You know, I think it's as simple as that, same as when we talk to our elite athletes around, I want to play in the NBL or I want to go to college. Okay, are you matching the work ethic of the people that have made it there in the past? You know, do your habits match your goals? And I think if you can objectively reflect around though, why you did or didn't make it and did you do what was required to make it, then obviously you start to go into that level or those areas of conversation, what Zoe was talking about, like, is this the right environment for me or not?
Yep. And I mean, the honest part of that is probably the most key part. Like, it's all well and good to sit there and say, yeah, but I went and got shots up 3 weeks ago. Like, yeah, but that's the only time you went and got shots up was 3 weeks ago and you expected the outcome to change, and the habits is such a big part of that. You can't change what's happened previously. You can't change the selection. Like, I know everyone is sort of hoping that, oh, maybe someone from a team higher than me won't accept their spot and then I'll get bumped up into that. And it's like, yeah, you're really just hoping at that stage. You haven't put, not necessarily the work in, but you're just hopeful in that space.
You can't, you know,
I guess, relying on that.
Yeah, I think, you know, similar with study, right? People say cramming. You know, you can't go and cram before your trial. You know, you might get a little bit sharper, but you're not going to become something that you're not in 3 or 4 weeks before your trial, which I've seen so much people trying to sign up for our rep programs and stuff like that. Oh, we've got to get ready for rep trials. You know, we're going to transform in 3 weeks.
Yeah, it doesn't quite work that way. It's funnily enough. And I mean, you touched on it before, Bestie, too. Like, the parents can have such an important role in this. Like, and I know with state team type stuff, when we get down to sort of the pointy end of it, like the last 20-odd athletes, like, we start talking to the parents a little bit more about, look, there are three possibilities here. Your child is in, your child is out, your child is an emergency. So you need to prepare them for all three of those situations. And, you know, hopefully it is a case where this is not a shock to them. Like, they are a little bit prepared for, look, this can go one of a few different ways. And, I mean, parents know their kids better than the coaches will know their kids. So it's an interesting area that a lot of the groundwork, I suppose, can be laid by the parents for what can possibly go right or wrong here. How am I going to deal with the reaction?
Yeah, and it's super important to remember from a parent point of view, in some of the, when I was in Clubland, and Bestie, I'm sure you would have had a bit of this as well, your child's team selection is not a reflection on you. It is simply, sometimes, and I think we've spoken about it before, sometimes it can come down to timing. You know, you could be the fifth best big in that age group. So no team's going to take five of them because balance is...
Jeez, I wish they would.
But balance is important as well. You know, we've got to, you know, learn how to play with different athletes, different positions, all that sort of stuff. So it could come down to something as simple as that. Now, there is no writing anywhere. There's no... Well, I would like to think there's nobody looking around and thinking, oh, that athlete made the twos or the threes and that's a reflection on their parents. It's got nothing, no one's thinking that. And that is really helpful to remember when you are trying to prepare your child for all those different outcomes that could come about.
Well, I think, sorry.
Are you right?
The other part of that is how they deal with it. Their character, their manners, all those things absolutely is a reflection of you as a parent though.
Yep, without a doubt. Like, and I mean, you've absolutely nailed that. And one of the things we do see after selections have been made is the comparison. Oh, but that child made that team and my child is better than that. Hang on, like, that's not fair. Like, you're now starting to take two very different situations and try and combine them into one. So I think it's that, you know, whole comparison is the thief of joy. Quote, like, it's that kind of thing. Don't compare what you are at this point to where someone else is at. Just might be the same pathway potentially, but very different points to get to that pathway.
And no program's going to talk to you about somebody else's child. It's as simple as that. So don't even bother with it. Seek the feedback and then, you know, figure out your plan from there with your child.
Yep. And when we say seeking feedback, what, 15 minutes after the selections have come out, bestie? Is that when you're expecting that first email saying you've butchered this and when high emotions and those types of things? Or would you recommend potentially waiting a little bit longer before you go about composing that email?
Yeah, well, we touched on this with the last week when we talked about maybe after games and stuff isn't right. Yeah, we have a process with our high performance programs that all feedback has to come through DOCs in Metro. Now, I know that's a little bit different in country, but partly because the feedback that we give, we want it to be delivered the right way. And, you know, maybe a plan put around how they can improve on these areas. But yeah, I think it's important to make sure that you let, you know, the dust settle. And maybe if you are going to do an email, don't hit send straight away. You know, sleep on it, yep. Reread it.
Yep. What's your record? What's the earliest somebody's sought feedback from you?
To be in minutes, surely.
Yeah, it is definitely within minutes. And, you know, I'll give a little bit of a shout out to Ash Zalek, the media and marketing guy at Casey. He could actually see how many people were on the website around the time that we would post teams, because we always waited till 5 o'clock. We didn't want to do it during school time and all those type of things, right? And, you know, there'd be hundreds of people waiting, and he would, you know, give me the data each time. But the biggest thing is it would come from people that you would hope that it wouldn't, maybe some that you'd had a connection with, maybe you'd coached with them and their kid had come through and they maybe had some access to you via your phone number or messenger or something like that, that you hadn't had. It wasn't meant to be used for that, I guess. Yeah. And then just ding, hey mate, just why isn't my kid, you know, like that is quite disappointing, to be honest.
Yep. And I mean, the hard part too is feedback is frequently combined into complaining. It's, you know, you can ask for feedback. I don't think there's anything wrong with asking for feedback. And it probably shouldn't be, why did my child not make that team? It should be, how can my child improve to have a better opportunity in 12 months' time, whatever the case may be. So how you frame it can really say a lot about the email. Like, nobody wants to read War and Peace on the email. Like, that's, if it's more than probably 4 lines, you're going to have to wait even longer for a response, because now the coach is going to have to go through, or whoever it ends up being, and then decipher line by line what you've gone through. So if you just get something short and sharp, look, appreciate that trials are difficult for everyone. Can I just get some feedback on where player X is at? And you can go from there. I think that's a more appropriate way to go about it. It just solves. Like, it just takes a lot of the tension out of it.
Well, as a, you know, in HP, we've been encouraging athletes to do journaling, and we're doing more and more of that in our camps now. But I'm pretty sure every kid at a trial gets coached at some point. And how many of those kids wrote down something that was said to them? That's feedback. That's live feedback right there and then. They should be able to walk out of a session and say, you know, the coach at my basket said I need to do this, this and this. Yep. There it is. There's your feedback.
Yep, absolutely. I think it's a good way to go about it. So what we are looking at is ways that our players can improve away from, say, a trial setting. So, you know, there are a million different things. I've just gone through a trial process with an association, and, you know, that thing, like I made the joke 3 or 4 times, like every kid looks the same after about the third session. They all have bad haircuts and they all have ridiculous names. Like,
you're on the boys' side.
I was on the boys' side. Yeah, no. Like, the amount of blonde tip mullets I saw, insanity. Like, I don't know what people are thinking allowing that, but hey, you know, do your worst, I suppose, in that space. But it is that point where by the time you see 4 lots of age groups, you have a fairly decent snapshot at what's out there in sort of club land and what associations are dealing with and those types of things. So it's, the trial process is difficult, in particular for coaches who are going through the same thing. Like, I know at one of the trials, there was 114 boys in one age group. Like, that's a lot of kids to see to make a small number of teams over the course. So you do have to make some sort of snapshot type decisions when you're going through trials. But what are some of the things... and we'll start with you, Zoe. What are some of the things straight off the bat that you think kids can be working on in this next 12 months before trials hit again to improve their game?
Strength and conditioning and movement is massive. And I think we spend so much time looking for, you know, we don't make something we want, or we might make it, but we feel like we've always got to be on court, always got to be shooting the ball, always got to be doing skills training, all that sort of stuff, which... Don't get me wrong, I'm certainly not discouraging that. But in that time, you could be working on your body, because the functional movement and the looking, you know, strength and conditioning is so important. But it gets, like, Darren McGinnis has the greatest, I think.
Yep, in a core?
Yeah, analogy for it. He says we're the broccoli of basketball. You know, you need it. It's nutritious, but nobody wants it. And it's
until they realize
they until they realize they needed it. But by the time they realize they need it, it's too late. Yep. So I wouldn't be going and seeking extra on-court stuff. If you have made a team or you have made a program, I'd be going and working on that, taking that time to work on those things, working on your body, even things like prehab to avoid injury and all those sorts of things that, yeah, often get pushed to the side. And if you've then got the ability to be strong and be quick and to move efficiently, your basketball and your skills will just almost automatically improve from there.
Yeah, and it's, I mean, Beth, you spoke about it before, S&C is not one that's going to be fixed overnight. Like, that is a massive investment of time. Like, that is a, you know, we've all seen the lose 10 kilos in 10 days type ads. Not sustainable, not realistic. I can tell you, I've tried. Like, it does not work. Like, the Coach Pizza diet still wins out over a number of years. It doesn't get to that point. If you were going to invest in S&C, it is an investment and it is a long-term investment. Like, stay the course with that because, you know, you can lift weights the first time, be sore for 3 days and go, nope, not going back. And that's not a good investment. You have to keep fronting up on that and trying to get more and more out of it because, like, I went through a trial 2 days ago. We were talking about it. And the only difference between a kid in the first team and the kid who ended up making the third team was the physicality. Mm. Actually, in all honesty, a better IQ than the kid that made the threes. Just as good a skill set, you know, all that sort of stuff. But physically, the kid that made the threes couldn't take a bump. Like, every time we'd get monstered in the backcourt and just couldn't sustain it, couldn't go and get rebounds, whereas the kid that made the first team could, was physically ready, and that's a kid that we know had done a lot of S&C work. And to be fair, not necessarily from the basketball background. He was a footy kid that has gone in and invested a fair bit of time there. But, like, you can see it straight away. Like, when kids walk in the door, you know which kids are lifting and doing those types of things and looking after their body. And, I mean, the prehab stuff you spoke about is so vital as well. Like, if you've done S&C, you get injured less. Mm. Like, you can take more hits.
Well, and you don't want time off court.
Yep.
You know, you've got the opportunity to the worst thing would be during trials, and I think the thing that would make you very anxious would be not actually being able to be physically on court because you've sustained an injury that could have been avoided. Now, I'm not saying all injuries can be avoided, but, you know, long-term ones that keep you out for a while that do then affect your development can be avoided by taking care of your body earlier. And I think, you know, we don't know what we don't know. So I know I sound preachy when I talk about this, but we switch into this mode of, oh, well, I've got to go find a skills trainer and train with them four more times a week. Well, that's not shifting the needle. You know, that's the thing that will make ultimate change and improvement is something different because you're already on court a lot. You know, you're already doing all of those things. The workloads of some of these athletes is insane.
Monumental.
Yeah. Find something different. Find a point of difference and work on that. But like anything, you know, make sure it's somebody who's got your best interests at heart. It's somebody who understands what you're working towards. So it's not just a generic sort of plan that you'd get if you just signed up at a regular gym. You know, those sort of things. Make sure they're people that, you know, understand the sport and what's required for you.
I've been preaching this to our NPP men. The best ability is availability. You know, we have, as you know, from time to time, opportunities arise where there's a national team coach or COE coaches coming down to either observe a session or run a coach's clinic and opportunities to get on the floor with them for our kids that potentially want to get a scholarship at the COE. And if you're not available because you're injured and you're not looking after your body, you're then not front of mind. So we've been talking about that a lot. We've been investing in it, and it's one of the things that we did at Casey as well. All our athletes had to do, we had a club-wide warm-up and cool-down that was muscle activation that we went through in induction day, and it did eat into some practice time, but we started to see a real trend in, you know, kids being on the floor more often, which results in them, you know, improving. But I've had this conversation with a lot of kids and parents as well. You know, you actually need to invest in your body. Like, another basketball session right now isn't going to give you what you need. And there's certain things like shooting, you need to get volume and all those types of things in the week. But yeah, the Zoe's hit the nail on the head with that one.
Yeah, I think, like, don't undersell it. Like, and we're not saying you need to lift 7 days a week or anything like that. There's obviously got to be a little bit of monitoring in there. And I mean, you touched on it, Zoe, like, try, if you are going to invest in S&C, try and link up with someone that understands basketball. They're not just going to try and make you like the biggest, strongest person that now can't move. Like, there's got to be a balancing act between the two. So when you talk S&C, it's not just literally just punching out bench press. Like, there's a lot more to that. That might be plyometric type training. That might be, you know, Pilates, yoga, those types of things. Like, stretching can be such a massive part of S&C because, I mean, you spoke about it, Bestie, like, availability is important. If you can build your ankle strength to be better and you're more flexible and more bendy and those types of things, you will get injured less. So it's such a massive part of it. Like, I think it's Cam Rigby that was talking about it. It's like when he went over and played like high school basketball, I think it was, like the first, like, and they had him in the gym and lifting and all that sort of stuff. The first time it came to a rebounding contest, he just moved someone, grabbed the ball and made an outlet pass. He's like, it's like a drug. Like, you know, how good is this to be able to go and do that sort of thing? And it's bang on the money. Like, it is so important to be able to go and, you know, be a strong athlete that is not going to get injured as much. And you think about it, like, if the 80 kilo, you know, brick wall runs into the 45 kilo scrawny kid that's never lifted, which kid would you rather be?
Well, this is, you know, we in a HP setting have shown the importance of it by adding it to our, one of our pillars, right? So our six pillars, we all know that we talk about 1-on-1-0, 1-on-1-D, decision making, shooting. We've added in physical literacy, you know, to be one of those. And I think that's, you know, super important for us to be able to say that we value that and understand the difference of the difference between flexibility and mobility. You know, like, they're two different things. Like, mobility is being able to perform a range of motions with some stability. Yep. You know, and I'm not an S&C coach, but that's the crux of it, you know. So, and obviously shooting, that was the last one.
Yeah, please shoot, always shoot. Yeah. Like,
lift and shoot.
Yeah, exactly. But it's such an important part of it. So please don't discount it. Like, it's depending on your age as well. Like, if you're an under 12 athlete, please don't go and start, you know, trying to.
But again, that's why it's important to go to. Like, you can still, there are still things you can do at, you know, 11 years old and things like that that can help you on your way and start building up to eventually, you know, lifting and those sort of things. I don't know that anyone's going to throw an 11-year-old a 20-kilo bar and say, off you go. But the movement patterns, learning how to run properly, learning how to move laterally properly, all those sort of things, like, they are so important and can be your point of difference.
Yep, most definitely. All right, we'll move on from the S&C thing. Skills trainers. Okay, and we've all rolled our eyes at each other as we've gone through this. Skills trainer, like, there are kids, there are no question, that are better skilled than others. There are some that have amazing skill sets but have an inability to play within a team structure as well. So skill set doesn't always fix all the problems unless you're a shooter, in which case it fixes all the problems. Okay. But there are some things in that sort of skills trainer world that you do have to be super mindful of, because there are some really good ones out there that do a phenomenal job of investing in the kids and looking after them and doing the right thing. Bestie, what does a good skills trainer look like in your world?
I've got a list.
Oh, here we go.
I've got a list.
We'll give you a little bit of a...
story time.
No, look, and this is something that's very important to me, because I once worked in this space. So I used to do this, and then I've been on the other side of it, being in an association DSE, and now obviously... Back in HP, we had it in Tassie as well, but I've never, you know, Victoria and particularly Metro is just littered with people that are offering this as an option. And I think for parents and coaches recommending people and for athletes listening too, there's some things that should be non-negotiables when you're considering hiring a skills trainer. We'll talk a little bit about the difference between a workout trainer and a skills trainer too, because there's, you know, Instagram has sort of created this. So the first thing for me is accredited coaches. You know, so I say the same thing. I would not take my daughter to a swimming lesson without somebody that isn't up to date with swimming instruction. So before you take your child to anyone for any extra individual training, are they accredited and do they have the highest level possible that you can find? Right now, you might not find everyone with a performance level or a master level coach, we get that. But what level do they have? And if they don't have it, are they investing in it? Because it is very, very important. Yep. The second one, and probably most often overlooked, is are they insured? You know, do they actually have private coaching insurance? Because if your child gets hurt under their instruction, which once again goes back to what level of accreditation do they have, you know, are they covered for that? And I know a lot of the time imports end up doing workouts, but the reality is that unless it's actually a service ran through the association and the money goes to the association, not to the import, they're actually uninsured.
Yep, and that's an important one. Like, you bang on the money there, because this is a question I get a lot in my space as well, like the insurance side of things. Before I go and work out with this person, are they insured for any potential injuries? Because even though it's a skill session, you can still get injured. Like, it doesn't have to be contact stuff. You can still pick up an injury. So just because you are accredited as a coach does not automatically qualify you to be insured as a trainer. It's important that coaches understand that too.
Correct. And I can tell you, once again, having worked in this space previously, you know, I had an insurance policy that I had to pay my premium on each year, and you know, it wasn't cheap, but, you know, to consider doing it without it is just, you know, really risky and negligent from any parent that would do that, I would say. So that's number two on the list.
Yep.
Number three is, are they connected to the level that you're trying to go to? You know, so often, you know, the reason why you're going to do this extra training is to improve your status within a certain community. So maybe it's you want to make a higher rep team, or maybe you've missed out on SDP or whatever it is and you want to try and do that. Are they connected to that level? Are they aware of what is that the selectors are actually looking at? And you know, I would have this a lot at a club level as well. Or we work out with trainer X. And well, I haven't had any discussions with them, so they have no idea in what we're looking for. You know, so there needs to be a level of connection between that. And that actually comes by them having a connection with your coach, with your association. And do they actually go and watch you play? You know, as opposed to just having everyone come together, give me your money, I'll work you out, see you later, next group in, is very, very different than somebody actually going to see what they're doing, how does it apply within the system that you're trying to improve on, and also how does it work in a game setting. So once again, when I did this, I would only take a certain number of athletes, because part of my service was I would actually go and watch them play and I would give them feedback after the games based on conversations that I would have with their team coach. Because, you know, you've got to be very careful about undermining.
Yeah, you don't want to step on toes. And that's one thing I do find a lot of skills trainers do get, I don't want to say wrong, but they get it wrong, because they have their own perception of what this player needs to be, and here's what I'm going to turn them into. And it's like, yeah, that's great, but that's not what they are. Well, that's not their role required in this team, and it probably won't be their role required in 3 years' time. So why are you trying to turn them into something that's not them?
Correct. And I think we had one recently, a HP Zoom with a skills trainer from the NBA, and you know, he was very cognizant of that, you know, making sure there's a relationship with the team. You know, you don't want to be sending them clips saying, oh, you should have shot that, you know, when it's, you know, not within the team's offense. So those types of things, it's super important. And you know, there's probably two other ones I'll leave on, because it is a long list. Is the money paid going back into the sport, or is it going towards somebody's holiday? Right now, I think that coaches should be paid. Absolutely. We don't do a good enough job of that in Australia. But once again, there's certain level of coaches that should be paid. Are they accredited? Are they insured? You know, are they linked with the programs where you want to go? Those types of things. And you can quickly tell, you know, just by maybe seeing what car they drive, for example, you know, and what is a fair rate. And just lastly, touching on the workout coach versus a skills trainer, you know, the amount of times where, you know, we all see it, coaches book courts in the venues that we're in, maybe they're on other courts, and one or two athletes roll in and they do the workout, and then two or three completely different athletes roll in and do the same workout. So this is where the difference is between a workout trainer and a skills trainer is very different. You know, and I think a lot of people are unaware of that, where a skills trainer will actually give you a tailored solution for what you're trying to build on, whereas a workout trainer will often just do a generic sort of workout, which there is a time and place for that, for sure, but there is, you know, a big difference. and I'll take a breath.
No, no, it's this might be a new segment, Besties Lists,
yeah.
That we go through. But, I mean, you've hit on a number of great points there. That last one in particular, like if you started a gym, you get a program and you work towards that program because there's an end goal in mind as to what you're trying to do. If your trainer is not giving you a program, you have a workout coach. And again, that's fine. There are times where you just want to go and get a sweat on, you do your thing and you want shots and just someone to sort of banter with a little bit as you're going through it. No problems at all. There is a place for those types of people involved, no issue. But it's the, you know, is there a, I don't want to say pathway because I hate the term pathway in the sport, but I do want to say, is there at least a link between where you're starting and where you're going, knowing that sometimes, you know, it'll go really well, sometimes it'll fall off the cliff, so to speak, but can you see that there has been investment put into this? Is there a plan? Like I mean, similar to you, I do work out some kids here and there. Like I don't do it often purely because I value my time and I don't have a lot of it. So I tend not to do it unless I actually care about the athlete a significant amount or I've had some background with them or whatever the case may be. So I do work out some kids. But part of that is, it's exactly what you're saying. I want to go and see them play. I want to know in what environment they're playing in at the moment and where are the deficiencies that we can work on to build that up. I want to know what role are they being asked to play. Like if they play in the post during their game and we're going to come in and put them through a ball handling workout. I'm not saying the ball handling workout's not going to get them better, but it's probably not relative to what they are doing. There's a time and a place, again, to work on ball skills and those types of things. But does it link back is the biggest thing. And that's probably my criticism, is that not enough links back. Like any kid that I work out, I put together a little bit of an IPP on, just as a little bit of a look. Here's what we're doing short term, medium term, long term. Here are the areas of weakness we've identified that we want to go through. And it is all written there in like booklet form. And I've just realized I've forgotten to go back to a coach that asked me about this not too long ago and sent me their copy of what they've done. And fantastic. So I will reach out to you during the week. I know he listens to the podcast. I'll come back to you on this one. But it's one of those things that I think if you are going to work people out and you're going to put time into working people out, it's not that you want to see a payoff for it yourself, but you want to see the improvement to know that the work is being done and implemented into a game situation. So you do have to be very careful that unless it's written down, you know, how do you know they're not just turning up and saying, hey, I saw this on Instagram this week. This is my new drill that I'm going to try and do with you.
Well, often coaches that are, I guess, I'm not sure if lower level is the right thing to say, but they often just do the things that they're comfortable teaching.
Yep.
And that's just the reality of it, because they're good at it.
Yep.
You know, they don't have either the inclination or the time to invest in learning to be able to do something new or maybe something that's relevant to that particular player. So they'll just go and do the same thing. And it's often with team coaches as well. We see it. We do the same drills, even though that team might not necessarily need that. Yep. So this isn't a knock. This is an awareness thing for parents before they go into these things. You know, if you're, for example, we've just had our HP selections go out, and if you're perhaps a little disappointed that your child did or didn't make it and you're going to take them to go and work on stuff, do those trainers understand our selection criteria?
Yep. And the different pathways. Well, geez, I keep using the word pathways and I'm going to hate myself for it. But, you know, what is the end goal? Like, is the end goal NBL, WNBL? Is the end goal college? Is the end goal, I just want to keep playing? Like they just enjoy that. In which case, well, the program has to change from what you're going through at the moment to what it would look like for the next athlete. Like, Zoe, what's your experience with skills trainers?
To be honest, I haven't had a great experience with skills trainers for every single reason that Bestie just put up. And it's not to say they're all like that, but just the ones that athletes that I've come into contact with have been using. I think one of the really important things to remember too as a parent, if you are selecting a skills trainer, is your child the product? So is the coach spending all the time filming the session to put it up on socials and things like that to get more kids in, draw more kids in? Or are they focused on your kids and, just like Bestie said, is it targeted to what they need? Because the best skills trainers that I've seen have not needed any of that. They don't need to try and attract people or anything. Their work speaks for itself. Mm. And I think I'd feel really uncomfortable if I took my child, not that I have a child, but my child to a skills trainer who was spending all their time filming it and, you know, trying to do all these things that are just not relevant. Like, you know, 6 or 7 crossovers on the spot, they haven't gone anywhere, and then they go make a layup. That's not going to help your child progress, because is it game relative? And the answer is no. So all those sort of things, and it, like I said before, we don't know what we don't know. So as a parent who may not have a basketball background, you might look at that and go, oh, that's impressive. Seek out somebody you trust that understands the sport, the landscape, what Bestie's saying with selection criterias and things like that, and ask for their advice before committing to anybody, because I've seen a lot of people waste a lot of money. And, you know, another thing with, you know, are they claiming your child when they succeed is another one that really bothers me. You know, is your child's success something that they, again, splash all over social media and, you know, tell anybody that will listen that that's their work that created that? That's a red flag for me, because at the end of the day, the athlete did the work. It's your job as a coach to work hard and to provide an environment to help them develop, especially if you're being paid to do it. So, you know, I just, these sort of things, you know, don't let your child be a product. You know, you're going there for your child to develop and get better, and make sure that is what the coach is interested in.
And it's not easy to find. Like, to be fair, there are tons of people out there, like as much as I hate social media, like I am on like the neighborhood Facebook group, whatever it's called, like, you know, whatever,
community voice
or whatever it is. And the amount of like little skill sessions I see popping up on that, It's like, I've never heard it. Like, and to be fair, if I haven't, not to big note or anything like that, but if I haven't heard of you when you're advertising skill sessions, that's a problem straight away, because like I know most coaches that sort of go through programs and pathways, and it's like, who are you? Like, why are you doing, like, do you just love the sport? And that's fine too. Like, if you're just someone that really loves the sport and wants to give back to the community and those types of things, no issue whatsoever. Like, would always encourage people to go and get involved in sport. But similar to your point, Bestie, go and further yourself. Get accredited, go and get some training, go and give back to the community, and go and invest from that side as well, because otherwise you're just another social media trainer.
Well, and can I also just say too, the reliance on athletes these days on needing to have a coach with them when they work out it's gone through the roof. You know, as Bestie said, at any practice, any trial, you're getting live feedback constantly. You know, obviously, you know, 9, 10 and 11-year-olds probably haven't been in the sport long enough to put something for themselves together. But, you know, 14, 16s and definitely 18s, there's no reason you can't put together your own little workout and things that you know you need to work on, and run yourself through it. You don't always have to have a coach there. And I think, you know, I'd probably, if I was a parent, I'd probably prefer my child to try that first and then, you know, maybe bring someone in for a, hey, are we on the right track, or, you know, something like that, rather than just fully commit, fully, you know, throw so much. Some of the prices are insane, and you know, fully commit to that to then not really know if you're going to get a reward on it. You know, I think, and it helps your child with, you know, IQ recognition, work ethic, all those sort of things, which will actually make them a better basketballer.
Well, some of the best, I guess, skills trainers that I've seen often only do a block with an athlete. You know, it's like, all right, we're going to hit you with 5 or 6 sessions, and then you're going to go away and work on this on your own, and then come back. Not every week, you know. Yeah.
And that's care though, right? Like, that's, you know, I'm not trying to, like you're saying, you know, fund my holiday or, you know, buy the new car or whatever it is, which again, I fully agree with you, Bestie. Coaches should be paid for 100%. Their time. Like, this, I think a lot of coaches do so much for free that if the opportunity does come to be paid accordingly, they should be. But that right there is spot on. You know, here's these things. Now you go away and work on them. And by the, you know, once you think you've hit them and you're ready to move on and come back, you know, we'll then take the next step. But that's a level of care that I don't think is out there.
And that's part of it as well, is you want them to be a good athlete even when you're not around. Like you don't need to be there continually. And like I saw a it stuck with me for years. Like it was a Mark Radford tweet actually, and could be completely out of context in this space. But I'm hearing both of you talk about this and things like, don't tell me how much work you're doing. Mm. Like if you've done the work, I'll see it the next time I see them play. And that's the true test as to what you're doing is actually working. Otherwise, you might just be handing over money to someone that doesn't really care if they get better or worse or anywhere in between. Like it's really important. The context behind that is that you don't have to sell every time that you work out on social media or something like that. Like remember the people that used to check in at the gym every time? It's like, yeah, good job. Like, yeah. Cool. Like, don't really care. It's that sort of thing. Like what you really want is the end product to shine through, and the end product is the skill set and the ability to go and play in a game, because we see it all the time. These people that have phenomenal handles of the basketball, it's like, yeah, they can make 18 crossovers better than anybody else out there, but that's not game relative.
Yeah.
So, I mean, do you guys have opinions, out of curiosity, between training as an individual or training as like a small group? Like, is there any sort of opinion from you two on which one's better?
Yeah, definitely. I think like there's a time for both for sure. But, you know, depending on your level of knowledge and also the level of athlete that you're working with, there's only so much you can do on zero, definitely around decision making. And I think even one-on-one can be a little bit dangerous because it promotes this shoot at all costs mentality. I know we've spoken before about this podcast of if you do have a workout partner for the person that you're going with, maybe the coach can be an outlet just in case, you know, there isn't a definite shot, because that's some of what this creates. But definitely there's time for some on zero. And if you are good, you can get it to the point where you overlap, you know, so you can have someone turn up for the back half of your session and then that becomes the front half of your next person's session. And if you're doing positional stuff and you've got your IPPs down and you're not sort of just running a factory, you can do some of those things, right? But you know, I think being able to watch them play in a game really should dictate what you do. So if we use the Boomers as an example, and obviously I would think that most people listening should be accustomed to the Boomers. Currently, Paddy's probably the one with the freedom to be able to maybe do 6 or 7 maybe isolation plays in a game, I would think. Most of the other players are ready in the corner, or they're coming off a pin down, or it's a straight line drive, 1 or 2 dribbles, that's it, right? So we're talking about the highest level in Australia for the men, which is the Boomers. There's one guy, you know, and it's the same as in the NBA, right? So there might be 15 guys.
But also, why is it that one guy? Because he has elite speed.
Correct.
Right? Like it's, you know, and
skill set to
genetic,
match.
Like, yeah. Right? That's but also worked on. But if you don't have that elite speed, you're probably not going to be that player.
Yeah. So become efficient at one bounce.
Yeah. Find your role.
Correct. You know, and then as you start to move up in the off season, right, that's when you can start to do some of these, you know, exploratory things to maybe grow your game. But to have immediate success is to be really good in your role, whatever that might be. So sometimes it is just a rip and go. Getting really good at that, which goes back to Zoe's work. If you're not doing the stuff in the gym, that can only be so good until you improve your athleticism. Yeah.
And let's face it, a lot of the associations out there and clubs will have some form of academy type program that also runs alongside the season. So for those of you that want extra work, explore that. Keep it within your association, because I know I can tell you factually, 48 hours ago, a kid and another kid will line ball as to which kid went into the second team, I think it was off the top of my head. And the conversation was, well, this kid's at academy every week. Like, we see him turn up every week and do the extra work. Excellent. That kid goes ahead. You'll get rewarded for it. Like, it's no association wants to sit there and say, yeah, we're not going to put the kid forward that actually does the extra work. Well, we're going to take him.
I can tell you the exact reason that we called the KC Academy Cavs Advantage. That's why it was called that. You come, you learn our stuff, you get better at it, you come to trials, you know what, you're good.
Yep, absolutely. So not that I'm advocating necessarily for people to lose more time out of their week, but the other sort of thing you can do is try and pick up an extra game or an extra training session with one of the other teams. Like I know previously I was coaching a first team. We left an athlete out of that first team that made the twos, which, to be fair, in hindsight, wasn't a great selection on my end. I think I screwed that one up. But we did throw the offer out there to say, well, look, if you want to come to our training sessions, you're more than welcome to. So still go to yours, but this is like an add-on in that space. And he turned up for every session. He was an excellent trainer. He made me regret it every week that I didn't select him. But phenomenal kid. Like his attitude and mindset towards that thing every week was never, I'm just the kid that got cut. It was always, no, I'm coming here to learn. I'm coming here to go against better kids. I'm coming here to learn and get better so that this will apply. And 2 years later makes the first team. So it's one of those areas too where you can find a lot of opportunities from within your club and association system to actually go and improve and not have to go outside that. And for mine, if you can keep it, don't want to say in-house, but if you can keep it all relative to where you're playing at that time, I think that has a greater value than going outside the system, so to speak. Film. Like Coops of his ears have just pricked up somewhere. If I say shooting next, like we're going to see Coops at the door and trying to bang his way through here. Like you can watch a lot of film to actually learn and how to play and what you should be playing and different type roles. Like you spoke about Paddy is a great example. Like do you study him? And it's all well and good to study him and try and be like him and no problem at all. And you know, like a Sammy Wickham is a great example on the women's side of the game as well of someone that is just an elite scorer, but movement-wise and skill-set-wise is great. And it's great to go and watch those people, but is it relative to your position and is it relative to the role that you play within your team? Because exactly that, Bestie, like not everyone gets to shoot the ball. Like it's just how it rolls. Like there are players that are literally told stand in the corner and if it comes to you, then you can let that thing go. But any other time, don't worry about it.
Can we just put the caveat on there? At senior level.
At senior level, correct. At junior level,
give everyone a go, please.
Yeah, without a doubt. But we are talking sort of senior level in that space. So as you work towards that, it is important to understand what types of shot are you going to get. Like, do you watch your own game film back and say, look, I actually probably could have done A, B, and C? Like, you do have to be a little critical of yourself. You've got to be kind to yourself as well, and you're not going to make every decision a good one. But you can look back on it and say, well, okay, I'm going to study this myself. Even if my coach isn't going to tell me what to do, I'm going to look at it myself.
Yeah, and you need the ability to have the skill sets to morph into whatever role is necessary. So my first year out of the AIS, I played for the Canberra Capitals with Lauren Jackson, which is still one of the highlights.
She's still playing, do you know that?
Yeah.
Whack.
Righto. she was much better than me. but still one of the highlights of my career. Now, I was coming just from out of the AIS. I played in the post. You know, I got the ball a lot. I was back to the basket, wheeling and dealing, doing all of that. I then step into this team. Well, I'm not taking that away from the best player in the world. I'm not taking shots away from her. So my role now is to get her the ball. And it's one of the things now as a coach I find I'm saying all the time is, you know, flash to the high post, you know, for that high-low look. Like, I feel like that's where it came from because literally that's all I did. Flash to the high post, high-low, hit Loz, game. You know, and it's – but then, you know, come back here, play for Spectres in Seawall, and I'm back to that other role of, you know, putting points on the board and taking, you know, a large volume of shots. So the skill sets need to be rounded and you need to be able to – one, it's a conversation coaches need to have, but you also need to, especially when you get to a senior level, have the ability to see that and go, hey, I'm not needed for this, but I am needed for that and I'm going to be as elite as I can be at that particular skill set.
Yep. And how much review did you do of that? Like, was that something you realised by yourself or was that something a coach made you aware of?
No, I realised that as soon as I signed. but one of the things I did do and the reason I brought this up, which I then didn't talk about, was the film became really important. So for me, I was studying film to see, all right, at what stages is my player going to be the reason she can't get the ball and what do I do? How do I get to where I need to get to without you know, blowing up our offense and all those sort of things. So that then, because of the amount of film I was able to watch, and Graffy was amazing at supplying it, which also helped. But and this is back in the day before.
Yeah, there was no, you know, like Huddle or YouTube that you're going into. It was literally a VHS.
Yeah. Hang on, it wasn't that. I'm not that old.
Betamax.
But that then became instinct. Yep. So in the games, I didn't have to think about that. It was just as soon as I saw that, then this happened. And that is just so important to be able to understand and have those things become an instinct, because the less you have to think, the slower the game becomes.
Yep, and it is one of those things too where you watch film the first time and you're probably only going to watch yourself, and you're going to get a little bit giggly about the things you muck up and all those types of things. So the more you can watch it, the more that goes away, and the more you actually watch the game for the game and to actually try and learn. Like, just out of curiosity, Bestie, and one without notice, do you watch the game as a fan now, or do you only watch them as coaches?
This is actually the reason why I've really gotten into Formula One.
Yeah, okay.
Because I'm finding it very hard to watch the game as a fan now. Yep. And I watch Formula One as a fan because I don't know too much about it, right? but I think, yeah, it's very hard to watch the game as a fan now and not to get into, oh, that's good. And quite often when I am watching it at home, I'll hit pause and I'll draw that up and I'll do this and that. So, yeah, I find it difficult. Yep.
And the problem is our group chat then goes off.
Look at
start
this.
Dissecting the game. Yeah. And
yeah, so I find it hard, and hence the reason. Well, that and Drive to Survive, like, get on it, really good. That's what got me into Formula One, just something different. Yeah.
Yep. What about you, Zoe?
Yeah, I have a hard time watching and
Separating.
Yep. But I think I find it easier with things like EuroLeague in a way. I think because I'm not invested as much as I am with WNBL and NBL, because I don't know as many people, and when I say know as many people, literally don't know anyone. So
someone with an itch in the surname, and yeah, that's about it.
So that's easier to watch and not get as invested. But then I, similar to Bestie, I'll be like, oh, and I'll pause it, rewind, and it sort of just takes the, I guess, the enjoyment. Not the enjoyment, because I do enjoy that, but the just being able to sit and watch and and unwind. I used to be able to watch basketball and unwind. I definitely can't do that anymore.
Yeah, no, I completely agree with both of you. And the reason I got into soccer, like the all or nothing doco, it's like, well, look, you know, this seems interesting. And then Pep Guardiola converted me. And, you know, it's just one of those things.
But
where
then you watch that separate too, and you hear the stuff he's saying and how he coaches and all that sort of stuff, and you're then pulling that stuff as a coach as well. Like
it
is.
Well, it's very interesting because we're lucky at the moment to have my wife's parents down with us from Queensland for a little bit. And like, a game's on it. And this is one of the things that's annoying me now, that we're not in the huddle in the NBL games. Like, I can understand the reasons behind it, but I used to live for those timeouts. Yep. And he'd be like, the timeout would come and everyone starts talking. I'm like, shut up.
Yeah.
You know, like, I actually want to listen to this part, you know. So I'm really disappointed that we're not in there anymore. You know, like, obviously the interviews are showing some insight or whatever, but yeah, that was a highlight of those games.
Yeah, the NBA-wide stuff isn't quite the same, is it? Like, hey, play harder.
Well, it's very edited.
Yeah, exactly right. You're not getting the intricate X's and O's. Back on topic. Apologies, I took you guys off on that one. So the other thing you can do, get shots up. Like, it's, I mean, we link back to shooting, obviously, but most gyms, and when I say gyms, like the YMCA-type venues, are free 6 o'clock in the morning. There's nothing else on those courts. Get up and go get the shots up. Like, that's the best time to go and do it.
Well, and the amount of athletes I see with, you know, these amazing shooting systems at their homes. My goodness, I would have killed for something like that. Again, similar to, you don't need a coach with you all the time for everything you're doing. You don't need to be in a pristine venue, you know, by yourself, any of that. Go outside. You know, go shoot outside. Like, you, and if you're worried about, oh, the rim might not be quite the right height or whatever, you can form shoot on that. You know, like, it's about technique. It's not so much about, you know, judgment and those sort of things. Yeah, it's you can always find ways. And I think sometimes we get stuck with I can't shoot because the courts aren't free. Well, the court down at primary school is free. you know.
It's, well, we saw that a lot during COVID lockdowns. Yeah. Like the only place that people could literally go and shoot were the primary schools, the secondary schools with outdoor rings and backboards. And it was amazing how filled those things were.
Yeah, when like, they hadn't locked the gates.
Yeah, exactly. Like, but there are ways. Is more the point on that. Like there are, if you want to go shoot, you will always find a way to go and be able to shoot in that space. So, yeah. And like, I mean, I love the early morning stuff because it sort of feels like you've accomplished something before anyone else has got out of bed yet. Like, so I'm not saying don't get any sleep because we all know sleep is a really big, important thing for our athletes. But like those early morning sessions, that is gold time.
Well, and again, it's like Bestie sort of mentioned before about do your habits align with your goals? You know, Lono has a great saying of be a participant in your own recovery. So you can sit there and say, oh, you know, I can't do this because of this or I can't do this because of that. Let the excuses go and find a way. The great players have all found a way. They haven't always, whilst now they can have a gym whenever they want, they can, you know, have access to everything. They have that now because there are no excuses back when they were juniors.
Yeah, and the best junior shooter or just shooter that I've ever been lucky enough to be around was Rain Smith in Tassie. And obviously everyone saw what he did in his Boomers debut with like 22 points and lots of threes and multiple 40-point games at junior nationals. He was – his work ethic was relentless, like thousands and thousands of shots each morning to the point where his mum would, you know, Penny, like – lovely lady, but she would have a dig at us like, you need to get me a physio appointment for rebounding, you know. Because like, he was just, you know, in there and he had a sheet and he would do it. And, you know, we set shooting goals for our MPP periods and all those. And he was someone that, you know, did it and, you know, got to the COE, obviously made a Boomers debut, like doing well in college and through that one skill, you know, shooting and just getting out there and doing it. And if he, you know, it's weather's cold in Victoria, but if he's doing it in Tassie, you know, we can do it here.
Yeah, no excuses. That's more than enough. So
it's funny though too, how if it's raining, oh well, we can't go outside. But if we were playing AFL, we'd be training in the rain. You know, it's funny I think the thought process that we have between the two sports.
Character building.
It's
one of those things you just got to try and make it work. The last one I had on this, go be the best player in that team that you have made. Like, so stop worrying about the how can I, you know, get into that team. Well, the best way to get into that team is do a good job where you are. So go and be the best player. Go and dominate that competition, but go and be a leader. It doesn't mean you have to be a jerk about it or anything like that. Like, I'm sure have you seen the Redeem team?
Yeah, I have, yes. Yeah, I have,
okay. Yeah. So we all know the Kobe mindset we talk about it all the time and, you know, to be fair, at times that can be very confronting for other athletes. It doesn't mean you have to be a jerk and hold people accountable incorrectly, but you can drag them along as well. Go and be a leader and go and find ways to make it work for you, but also as a part of the group. Because the worst thing you can be is the best player in that team that nobody wants to play with, because that gets back as well. Like, everyone talks, everyone knows who's who. Do you all want to play with that kid? Do I want to coach that kid? Geez, he's talented or she's talented, but not a great person. So you've got to work on your leadership skills in that space and view it as an opportunity. Do I want to be the 10th kid in the team up or do I want to be the first kid in the team down? And for me, I would always take the first kid in the team down. Mm. Like, and that, yeah, to be fair, I didn't often get that option. Like, I was usually the 7th kid in the 4th team down. So it didn't really matter as much for me, but it is one of those areas where go and be the best you can in that space and in that environment.
Yeah, and I think something, a trap we can fall into is worrying about the number. You know, we'll be at a club, make the twos, for example. We leave that, we're not going to accept that position, we're going to go play in the ones, but at somewhere else. But that team, that ones team somewhere else, is playing in a division lower than the twos were had you stayed. Now, what's going to get you better? You know, playing in the higher division. So, you know, it becomes, I think we get caught sometimes a little fixated on it must be the ones or, you know, it must be the twos, it must be this. What grade you're likely to play in, I think, means more than the number of the team.
Well, Dirk Nowitzki, Giannis, they were all playing in second divisions, right? And then went to the NBA. Worked out all right for them.
And the direct correlation to that is obviously a VJBL where we see a 15 beat a fourth team almost every season or something along those lines because, you know, the competition is so big and that middle ground is, I don't want to say it's muck, but it's very easy to get similar teams, just different numbers. Like the most enjoyable team I think I ever coached was a fifth team, and we beat the fourth team and the third team. Like, so it was that sort of thing where, yes, they were the fives, but the number was kind of irrelevant because the competition they played in, and I'd like to think the coaching, was commensurate to their level. They may disagree with you, unfortunately.
Did you just draw a line between Dirk and Giannis and the VJBL?
Absolutely did.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, yeah. No, this is part of our new marketing campaign at Basketball Victoria to promote the VJBL worldwide. Like, I can get the NBA fixture before I can get the VJBL fixture. That's how in-house it is at this place. So, yes, there is a direct correlation between the two, in case you're wondering. And the last one, my other last one, this is with the asterisk. None of this is exclusive to missing out on a team. Like, this is all stuff you should be doing, even if you've made the team or made the program that you want to make. Because even if you're not working, someone else somewhere is. And that's that morning thing. Like, that's the reason I used to love the SDP sessions, or the ITC sessions, they were called back in the day. At 6:30 a.m., I knew those kids were walking out there dripping with sweat, doing something that nobody else had done, or very few other kids had done. So it's a case of, don't rest on your laurels with that thing. Don't be content with, cool, this is where I'm at, now I'm good. Go do the work. Like, that's such a big area of it.
Yeah, and, you know, if you are going to go down the path of your looking at your outside trainers or providers, just, you know, refer to the list. We've given it to you.
Can't muck that up. Like, it's besties. I'm telling you, this is going to be a thing. Like, next week, next time he's in, we're going to do like top five Netflix watches. We've already got number one, like, but we're going to get what's next on this thing. So, coaches, that does wrap us up for today. Once again, if you do have anything for the mailbag that you want to send through, you can hit us on the email. You can hit us on socials with the hashtag TalkingSplit, and we'll be able to pick anything up from there. Thank you both for jumping into the podcast this week. Zoe from the Country Women, Bessie from the Metro Men. Smash it, 2 for 2 this time through. Coaches, good luck with your coaching, and we will catch everyone on the next podcast. Look, tune in, join the tribe on iTunes and Spotify.